Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Fort Bragg's backyard, this is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation, and you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board. There is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
Welcome everybody to the 110 Nation Sports Show. We're still having typical difficulties. Now the Wi-Fi is once again not working. Hopefully we'll be able to get this show on the roll at some point or another. Well, tonight's show might be washed. We're about to find out, ladies and gentlemen. Got a little Time Warner and Charter, more specifically. Got Time Warner at one location, got Charter at the other location, and it seems like no win situation in either place. So it looks like we're going to at least temporarily have Wi-Fi again. So let's try this again. Welcome, everybody, to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow me at CJ Sports 1. You can follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports. The 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. Also, check out our blog site, www.110nationsports.com, for all the latest we got going on over there. Monday night already, hard to believe. It's amazing how quick and it really, honestly, truly is. Remarkable how quick the weekend goes. I know people talk about it all the time. Oh, you know, the weekend goes, but I don't work on the weekend. Well, I work the weekend. So, genuinely, the weekends normally go by pretty slow because of the fact that I got to work all weekend long, and I put the majority of my hours in of my work week on the weekends. So, it usually drags on. But this weekend, I tell you what, I open once or twice on a weekend, and that's all I open on a schedule. And this schedule, I have 4 out of my 5 shifts that are open. And when I mean open, I got to be at 4:30 kind of open. So here I've gotten Saturday, Sunday, and Monday being up 4:30 on the open shift. And then to top everything off, I had the opportunity last night to go out to the Charlotte Motor Speedway to catch the Coca-Cola 600. Came across some free tickets last minute Sunday night, and we had to wait for everybody to get off work that was making the trip. But, one, I got a shout-out to Josh Cochran, and God, I can't think of his buddy's name, who actually got his hands on the tickets for us. And I definitely got to thank him even more specifically for allowing my son and myself to tag along. Finances are rather tight these days this way, so it was one of those things that a free ticket and a free ride there was the only way it was going to happen, and they made it happen, so I got a shout-out to them and thank them. But not only did I have to open 3 days in a row and put the extensive hours in, but then we also throw in a race in the middle of that, so they went to this afternoon was one of those afternoons that it was, let's get some rest and let's try to recuperate a little bit. But did do Rubbers Racing with Steve Billmeyer from 7 to 8. You guys missed that. Actually, it was about 7 to 8:15. We just got on a lot of different topics. Make sure you guys check that back out, or check that out on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. It should be, I should have it uploaded on here on BTR after the show as well, and you guys can catch it at 11:30 tonight as well. Got off there, shot over here to Shorty's, had one technical difficulty after another, but we're here, and hopefully we have no more Wi-Fi or any other issues. We'll run this until 10 o'clock, or I'm sorry, 11 o'clock. So we got about the next hour and about 38 minutes left to get into this. Tell you what, we found out that we were getting a ticket Saturday night, and we knew out the gate that I had to work from 5 a.m. to 3. They were working until 5 o'clock, so we knew it was going to be a rush once we got done with the done with work. And it was one of those things that all day long it was raining and raining and raining with the tropical storm coming up the East Coast and more specifically South Carolina. And our thoughts and prayers are out to all those out there in South Carolina that are experiencing all the unfortunate flooding. As I've seen a lot of I have seen a lot of pictures of some unfortunate flooding going on. So thoughts and prayers out to you guys. And hopefully everybody is safe. But on and off it was raining. And even when we was getting ready to leave, it was still raining in this area. And we got on the road. We got about halfway there. And Kayla Lyons, that comes on the show quite regularly, about once a month, I saw them post pictures, her father more specifically. So I'm actually messaging Shen to see what it was like. You know, it was getting close to being 6 o'clock, and I wanted to know, you know, is there a delay? What's the weather like? What are we looking at? And he was like, look, it's clear. And my phone didn't say it's going to rain again till 3 o'clock. Track drives. Race is starting on time. And so we knew we had to pick up the pace a little bit because we didn't actually get on the road until about 5:15-ish or so. And it is one of those things. It takes about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and especially depending on how things flow, because the route we got to go is a single lane road all the way down. So if you get stuck behind people like we did quite a few times, it can really slow things up. But we got there. Well, we actually we jumped in the vehicle and I picked up my son. My son got to go, and thanks to Shorty, she had the opportunity to really pursue finding a babysitter and go. And she knew if she didn't really push it and didn't go, that I would take one of my two children. And the daughter was working, so she couldn't go. And so my son got the opportunity, which was cool because it seems like I've taken to a Charlotte race since Daytona. But the last race that I actually remember taking him to was the 2011 Daytona 500. But me and him both specifically talked about it. Seems like maybe it was Rockingham. Maybe that was the track we were forgetting about that I took him to. No, it seems like I know I took him to Rockingham for the truck race when they came back to Rockingham a few years ago. But it seems like I had talked to Drew and got earplugs for us at a track. So it seemed like he was at another track, but I can't remember to save my life. But he was glad to be there. He was glad to have the opportunity to go to a race. Kind of worried for the race, so there was a few times I looked over at him, and he just looked like, why am I sitting here? Like, what else could I be doing? But, you know, after the race was over, he talked about how fun it was and how great of a time he had. And when I dropped him off, he was talking about how great of a time he had. So I was glad to know that he just looked that way, and he didn't really feel that way. And so it was really cool to have the opportunity. But we had turn four. Second row seats, like, we were right there. And what was cool was when we came up on our seats, there was actually people sitting in a part of our seats. We had four seats. And I was like, you guys are in our seats. And then I went to the row for our first row, and I was like, there's nobody sitting there. I was like, you know what, never mind. You guys can sit here. You guys are already comfortable. Just go ahead. We'll go down. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, yeah, I'll take the front row seat versus sitting in the second row, even though it didn't really make that much of a difference. But, yeah, we end up sitting in the front row. And if you've not seen it on 110 Nation Sports, where if you're friends with me personally on my personal Facebook page. You guys need to check out the pictures. It lets you see really how close we were. It was funny because we went to McDonald's after the race, and we went to the McDonald's after the race, and we were sitting rubbing our hair and just watching all the rubber fall out. And it was funny because one of the my buddy, he was ordering food after us, and he started yelling at the cashier. And I'm like, look, you're yelling. You need to stop. Like, you're being extremely loud, and you need to bring it down a couple of notches. Like, I'm yelling. I was like, yeah, you're yelling. But great race. I could have done away without the 392 laps of Martin Truex leading. I don't have a problem with him winning the race. No, I didn't have a Big Mac. We was on a very strict budget there. It was McDoubles. It was a dollar menu for myself, and I spent like $2 or $3 on myself and let my son get the food. But I could have done without the dominance. Like I said, I don't have a problem with Martin Truex winning the race. I like Martin Truex. Very deserving of an opportunity to win the race, especially the Coke Zero, or the, I'm sorry, the Coke Post 100. I just wish it had been a little more competitive. 392 out of 400 laps. That's a lot of one person being out front. And, you know, like I was talking on rubbing his race, and, you know, I got excited when there was about 50 laps left, and Jimmy Johnson actually, you know, caught Martin Truex and actually passed him. I don't know if that point in time he actually got credit for leading any laps. I can't remember, but I know that, you know, he caught him and he passed him. I still don't know, you know, was that the start-finish line or not. And even Kevin Harvick had gotten part of that, into that group. And it looked like we was going to see a 50-60 lap, you know, race with these three guys that pretty much had been up front all night long. And the caution came out for debris, and I don't know if Martin Truex made an adjustment, the tires made all the difference, or what the case was. But after that green dropped, Martin Truex took back off. That was the extent of it. And that was, you know, that was all she wrote, really. Got to thank NASCAR for making me look like a liar. I told the guys, I was like, look, every race that I've been in the Coke Zero, or I'm sorry, I don't know why I keep saying Coke Zero, Coca-Cola 600, it's been 11, 12 o'clock before I've gotten out of there. Like, it's always been a really late night. That race finished, and it was like 9:59. I'm like, what the hell just happened? And, you know, I can hear him over the intercom talking about the fastest race, the 160-point blah, blah, blah. Beat a new, you know, new track record, or beat it since the 1995 track record. But it just blew me away how quick that race was. Like, I honestly thought we'd be leaving about 11, 12 o'clock. I told my ex, I said, look, I'll be dropping him off probably like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Because not only, you know, did I figure it'd be 11, 12 o'clock before we got out, I also figured the hour and a half, 2 hour drive, plus I thought we would be sitting in traffic. And I want to shout out to the state troopers and the Charlotte Motor Speedway traffic plan, whoever gets credit for it. I know Big Sweat said it was Humphrey Wheeler and his doing, and why and what he did back in the day is why it is the way it is. But I tell you what, when we got to that McDonald's, it was about 10:15-ish, 10:20-ish, and it takes about literally 10-15 minutes to get there. Like, we did not slow down at all. The only time that we slow down is once you leave the Charlotte Motor Speedway, when you make that right-hand turn, you kind of have two lanes, and there's really nothing out there. Philip Morris is out there, but there's no business. There's really nothing out there. You go under a bypass, but then you come into the little city that has the lights and everything else. That was the first time we really honestly slowed down, and that's just because we hit the light. If not for that, we would have not have slowed down at all or stopped at all until at least we get to McDonald's, and, you know, everybody was just hungry and people needed to use the bathroom. That's why we stopped there. But I was blown away. Like, the last two races, more specifically, I can remember, I can't remember the rest, traffic was amazingly smooth. Like, it blew my mind, because if anybody's, you know, if you've not been out there and, you know, you don't know how the layout is, like, when you go in front of the track, it's like four lanes. But when you get down to where we were, and we parked right outside Turn 4, which worked out really good because that's where our tickets were, and when you walked up the hill right there, it was Gate 31, or 30 31, and we happened to have to go on Gate 31, so we lucked out on even where we parked at. But where we come out of our parking at, and where most people, that's where the free parking is, they have it blocked down to one lane. Well, they have two lanes. The lane that the four lanes go down to one lane, and then you have the one lane that's where we get to come out of the parking lot, and then you eventually merge, you have the two lanes. They do it with the cones, but they do it so all the people coming out of the parking get to get out of the parking lot. And I was beyond blown away, like, how smooth the traffic was. That I was waiting for, at some point there'd be sit, us had to sit somewhere in traffic as I have in years past, or, at least slow down, and I've been to 8 different tracks now. I've had the opportunity to go to Rockingham, Atlanta, Bristol, Homestead, Daytona, Martinsville, Bristol, Kentucky, and Charlotte. And Charlotte, by far, especially these last two races that I've been to, hands down, nobody has anything on what those troopers do, how they got that all set up, how the traffic flows. It is beyond amazing. I've sat in my fair share of traffic. I have had to sit there for hours before. I tell you what, when I say that we did not even slow down, we literally did not slow down except for if we went, had a light and had a stop, or maybe we came up in a light that was just turning green and had to slow down for that. That was like the extent of any kind of slowing down. So I was blown away with that, and mass shout out to all those that made that possible. It's, a phenomenal, phenomenal job. But all in all, enjoy the race. I tell you what, as a fan, that is probably the best seat that I've ever had. I've been to, when we went to, as a fan, I sat on the back stretch at Daytona for the 2011. We were there right outside Turn 2. Basically, if the back stretch was the front stretch, we would be basically where pit entrance was on the back stretch at Daytona. It's basically where it was at. It was a little bit out of the turn. It was just a little bit down the back stretch. It was great for my first Daytona 500, but wasn't really the idealistic, seats to have for Daytona. We had the Coke Zero one of the years. We were basically at the start-finish line, which was great. The other year, we went to the Coke Zero 400s. We had hot passes, so we were in the garage area. When I did Rockingham, we were in turn one. Pretty good seats there as well. I can't remember Atlanta in 95, and I can't remember Charlotte in 2001 where we sat at. As a matter of fact, Atlanta was towards the top of the grandstand, probably halfway in between turn four and the start-finish line, but this was the old Atlanta layout. Now, it's changed a lot since 95. Kentucky, I've only gone as media. Bristol is media. Martinsville is media. Homestead is media. So, in Charlotte, I have been more towards the start-finish line, and I think we were on the back stretch where we was at on the other side. No, I think we did sit on the back stretch before they closed all that down in Charlotte, if I remember correctly. But this, by far, has a fan aspect. Turn four first, and we were, like, in the middle of turn four. So, we were before the pits when they had slowed down. We weren't, it was kind of, in the middle of turn four itself. And so you kind of seen them up against the wall. You've seen them, go down, slow down for pit road. You see them come out of the turn. Probably the best seats I've had as a fan. And so I got to thank the military, not only for the race. I'll talk about that for a second. But, of course, everything they do. And our thoughts and prayers are out, especially on this weekend, of all those that have either. And I know what Memorial Day is, of course, that's not Armed Forces Appreciation Day or Veterans Day. I understand what Memorial Day is about. But I want to make sure that I thank those that are serving, those that have served, but more specifically with this weekend, those that are family of those that have served that are no longer with us. I can only imagine, you know, what it's been like, and the hardship that it has been, you know, while they were in, but also losing them in combat. So thoughts and prayers go out for them. But I want to thank the military as well. That's where we came across the tickets. The roommate, his friend with somebody who was in the military or is in the military. They had details. They got tickets. They didn't know anybody, and so they gave the tickets to us. And it's funny because I had a sergeant first class talk to me today, and talking about, oh, I could have got you those tickets. And I'm like, we talk sports. You come into my place of business probably 2 to 3 times a day, and every time you come in, that's all we do is talk sports. That is it, 100%. You know what I do in my spare time. You know I go to these events. You know I'm all about some sports, and you're letting me know that you could have had tickets, and I could have already had this organized, and I could have took, you know, basically the whole family and everything else. Like, this all could have been a much easier task, and yet you passed up the tickets and didn't think about the fact that we have these conversations every day. I was like, really? He's like, next time I got you. I was like, all right, I'm just saying, like, we go through this every day. But got to thank the military for making that happen, and definitely want to shout out to all those that are serving, have served, or our family of those that are no longer with us. Thoughts and prayers with you guys. I tell you what, yeah, like I said, I called down there to make sure, or I didn't call down there, I messaged down there to make sure that the race was, you know, he said it was good to go, no, nothing. So we got there with about 180 laps into the race. And here it's only like 7:30. And I'm expecting about an hour to the race, we'll be about 100 laps in. Not almost at the halfway point. I looked at him and I said, this must have been a caution-free, fast-paced race. But there's no way in about an hour 15 or hour and a half or so that we are almost halfway through this race. Like, this race is really moving along. Perfect night. Like I said, if you're not a fan of the 110 Nation Sports page, you need to check it out. Like, I took pictures of the sky. It was beautiful. It was perfect condition for the race. And really enjoyed it. Martin Truex, 392 laps led. I don't think there's ever a more dominant. I know we've watched Kyle Busch lead for, like, all but one lap of an Xfinity Series race. We've watched some pretty dominating performances. I don't think we've ever seen a performance quite like what we saw in the Martin Truex last night. And like I said, I have no problem with him winning the race. You know, the fact that he has gone and overcome everything that he's overcome, especially with everything that happened and the way it happened at MWR and him losing his ride, and then his longtime girlfriend and cancer. And you know, I know a lot of people don't want to, you know, put that into, you know, him being deserving. I look at it a little bit differently because I can only imagine what he went through as well. And I won't take nothing away from her. She's fighting a good battle, and I'm glad that she is healthy, and I'm glad everything's going in the right direction for her. But, you know, being a full-time driver, 36 weeks of the year, 36 weeks is already locked up out of 52. Then you throw in an all-star race, there's 37 weeks. Then you add in speed weeks, you're already looking at about 38, 39 weeks out of 52. Then you throw in the fact that you start testing in January. So let's talk about another 3 or 4 weeks of testing in there. So now you're already looking at about 42 weeks out of 52 weeks is already tied up in your career. And not to mention any, you know, sponsor obligations, any, you know, autograph obligations, anything else you got going on. So can you imagine everything that he has going on, trying to maintain a household and whatever he's got going on? I don't know if he's got a phone. I don't know what it's all his personal business. And then be there for his longtime girlfriend and her appointments and her fight and her struggle and everything else. So, you know, physically that's got to be wearing him down. Mentally that's got to be wearing him down. And here he is last year and having the year that he had. And then this year, you know, starting off the way they did. If anybody deserved to have an opportunity to have a race like if anybody deserved to have a race like Martin Truex did, it was Martin Truex. You know, I'm a big Kyle Busch fan, but I don't think that I would be as happy or forgiving of a race car driver to really stink up and dominate a show like Martin Truex did. I think the only person that right now outside of Martin Truex that I could see dominating a race and me not really care would be Danica Patrick. And that's just because I would be in shock and awe. Not only did she win her first race, but she dominated the whole race. Like, that would be the only other person at this point that I could say, you know what, you led 392 laps. You deserve it. I forgive you. Don't ever let it happen again. But, I drove all the way up here, 2 hours there, 2 hours back, getting no sleep tonight, going on no sleep, then up to 4:30 in the morning, didn't get to bed until 2 o'clock last night, had to turn around here at 4:30 this morning to go back to work again. But I forgive you. I forgive you, Martin. Don't let it happen again. I think Mark Truex Jr. and Danico, the only two that I can see me saying that to at this point. Everybody else, don't let it happen. Don't do it again. Just don't do it, period. But part of me feels a little bit bad, though, because as much as I don't have a problem with winning it, and as much as I don't, I feel that he's deserving, have a day in the sun like he did, especially, everything that's gone on since the NWR day. For the fact that it's a satellite team of Joe Gibbs Racing, and remind you, I'm a big Kyle Busch fan. It's another anti Joe Gibbs Racing at this point. I applaud what Matt Kenseth did to Joey Logano last year. He deserved it. I'm sorry. I'm one of those people that still believe that Matt Kenseth never should have been suspended for those two races, that Joey Logano got what he deserved. I have no problem with Carl Cousin Carl. I don't have a problem watching him do some backflips. And, he's a class act driver to me. Denny Hamlin, I'm not big on him. I'm not against him. I'm not a big Denny Hamlin fan. Just never really been. So it's nothing anti-Joe Gibbs Racing, but like I've mentioned before, there's certain sports I can't watch. There's certain, and Mike talked about, I just got a message talking about him hitting the wall. Yeah, it was over in our area. I think it was turn 3 or 4 when he did it. If I'm not mistaken, it might not have been, but I remember seeing him come around with the damage on his car. But because there's certain sports I can't watch a driver or even now a team win all the time. NASCAR is one of them. If my Ohio State Buckeyes won every week, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But that's also because there's like 100 other games on Saturday. If my Cleveland Cavaliers won all the time, I wouldn't have a problem with it because there's 29 other teams out there. If the Cleveland Browns was ever to have, a season they went undefeated, like when the Patriots went undefeated, I had no problem with it because there was always, 16 or 15 other games going on Sunday, or at least 15 other games going on between the night game, day games, and Monday Night Football. So there was plenty of other opportunity. When you have one driver or even one team win every single race, you only got one race. That's it. And we got the Camping World Truck World Series, and we got the Xfinity. Well, newsflash, Joe Gibbs Racing has been dominating most of that as well. So it's really not helping that argument any. But I just can't do, that's why back in the day I was a Jeff Ford fan. I was back when he was back in the driving, the number one in the Busch Grand National series. And I got tired of him watching all the time. Then became a Jimmy Johnson fan. Then I got tired of watching him win all the time. So I figured, hell, I'd be a Danica fan. And, one, just because I like Danica. And I know Steve said she looks good in the bikini earlier, and I don't want to step on any toes, but she looks more than just good in a bikini. But, I also knew that was someone that I didn't have to worry about winning every week and get tired of watching them win. Now, also, I'm a big Kyle Busch fan, so I get best of the both worlds. I get someone who wins all the time and someone who probably might get one win of their whole career. But, It's definitely nothing anti-Joe Gibbs Racing. I'm just that way. Certain sports, I just can't sit there and watch or win every single weekend. And we, Mike was on the race or on the show. We talked about this last week, and I think he threw out a couple of names. I think it might have been Jimmy Johnson, Kevin Harvick, and then Keselowski, and now last weekend with Joey Logano. I think those are only like the four drivers that have won outside of Joe Gibbs Racing in all the races this year. But I can't remember if that's even the number, the actual names or how far back it is. The only thing I can remember at this point is Joey Logano wins the All-Star race because of the caution on the last lap. because I think, honestly, Kyle Busch probably could have passed Keselowski on the last lap of Talladega. Talladega went to Keselowski because of the caution flag. Outside of that, the only thing I can remember at this point is either Joe Gibbs Racing or now a pilot car or a pilot team of Joe Gibbs Racing has won a race. And I want to see someone else win a race. I want to see someone step up. You have no idea how excited I was when we were about 50, 60 laps from the end of the race, and I watched Jimmy Johnson catch up with Mark Chouet. And I know he passed him. I don't know if he got credit for leading any laps at that point in time. I know Jimmy Johnson didn't leave in five laps. Five of the only eight laps that Truex didn't leave. I just don't know if it was at that point in time as a race or not. I remember about 50, 60. I want to say it was more around 58 because I believe my son said something about 58 laps. And we hardly see the screen across the thing. And it seemed like while it was a caution, I saw it go down to number 58. And that's why that number kind of sticks out. But I was excited up until they had that caution because Jimmy Johnson was battling for the lead and had caught up with them. Kevin Harvick had caught up, was right there in the midst of the battle. Then they go to the caution because of the debris, and I don't know if there was adjustments made or what the case was, but all of a sudden that green flag went back out and Truex was gone, and that was all she wrote, and Truex ran away with it. But even though he's not a Joe Gibbs Racing car, it's a pilot car of Joe Gibbs Racing. And I don't know if it's wrong of me or not, but because of the fact that basically it's another Joe Gibbs Racing car, I'm not as excited as I probably should be for Mark Truex. And it is nothing against Mark Truex, and really it's not even nothing against Joe Gibbs Racing. It's the fact that one of those five cars has found itself in victory lane almost there. Just as dominant as Mark Truex was in yesterday's race, that's how dominant Joe Gibbs Racing has been, period, this season. And I'm ready for someone to step up. Even if they win the races, at least somebody step up and make it hard for them. Like, sorry, 392 out of 400 laps. There was nothing hard about that. That's the insanity. We got Shorty in the studio. She's joining us tonight. So let me go ahead and plug her in. How you doing tonight, Shorty?
I'd be doing even better if I had my Wi-Fi.
If you had your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, like, Wi-Fi's not picking up on my phone right now. It's weird.
It's staying on the tablet right now, and so we'll see how long. I was having troubles at first, so I had to reconnect. I don't know why it's having difficulties tonight, but hopefully we get that figured out. But, all in all, great race, great weather. I think it's one of those things that, and we talked about this Rubens Racing, and Steve agreed, it's the track cooled down because the temperatures got cool and it got night. We were all expecting somebody to fall off, another car to be part of, you know, it get better. Usually the transition in the track changes the handle of the car, and we was really expecting something different that just never happened. Not sure if the compound of the tire was too hard and it just didn't lay rubber right and just made it impossible for there to be a transition, but was really expecting a little bit, things to change up a little bit. And honestly, when it was about 50, 60 laps left, when all that went on, I thought that's what was going on. I honestly thought that Jimmy Johnson and Harvick's car had finally came in and Martin Truex's car had just lost a little bit because of the transition. And until that caution, then I was sadly mistaken and quickly corrected that that's not what was going on, that they had just simply, I guess, just caught him. I don't know if he was just being conservative or what. Like I said, maybe he had to make a slight change. Maybe the tires just weren't, you know, what they were. Maybe they wore a little bit more. But all in all, great time on the track. Like I said, you know, front row, could not have asked for better seats right there in the action. Got to watch the guys try to get the cars down to pit road speed. That was interesting. A couple guys almost lost it. There was a lot of locking up the brakes and flattening the tires. So there was a lot of, I don't know if there was anybody thinking about doing two tires or no tires at any point, but from what I saw, there weren't too many cars that had that option the way they were coming into the pit road as fast as they were. But I'm glad to have the opportunity to be out there. Like I said, you know, I got to thank Josh and his buddy for giving us the ticket to give us a ride. Thanking Shorty for really not pursuing finding a babysitter, letting me be able to take one of my children. Got to enjoy a nice night. Like I said, got to bed like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. Back up, crack-a-lacking first thing this morning. So, tell you what, it's been a very long day, but glad to be sitting here. Glad to have had the experience of being out there in Charlotte again. And all in all, it was a fun time.
I wish I would have came.
Keselowski won twice, Harvick won, and then, of course, Logano won the All-Star race. That's what the numbers I'm getting in. Harvick, Keselowski, that's right. Harvick, Keselowski, and Logano count the All-Star race. Everybody else is in Joe Gibbs Racing, or pilot team of Joe Gibbs Racing, if you want to be technically proficient with the Martin Truex ordeal. But it's Matt Kenseth is one to race, isn't he? I don't want to say all the Joe Gibbs Racing guys are in, and all the Joe Gibbs Racing guys have won a race this year.
I know you're not talking to me, but I don't know.
I was geared more towards Mike. He's become the statistician for us on this show, and a real big help. I gotta give Mike a shout out. He does the Friday night show. We'll get him on here a little bit later to let us know what we got in the works for this Friday night and let you guys know a little bit about the Friday night show, where to check him out on Facebook and on Twitter as well. But for the One Tenacious Sports Show, he's kind of become this petition lately. He was a real key part of last Wednesday night show when we had Jennifer Jo Cobb on, and was very helpful with that. But we got Game 7 NBA Finals going on.
I might be watching Golden State game right now.
The Cleveland Cavaliers sitting at home right now with their take on Fox. Hold on, what's up? But Cleveland sitting at home right now, resting up as they've already finished their series. They finished that up. Since our last show, they went ahead and finished things up. They won Toronto and took care of business, beat the brakes off Toronto in Toronto. Glad to see that. Now just kind of relaxing and waiting for Golden State and Oklahoma. And I got to thank you, Oklahoma. I thought for sure at home you was going to take care of business Saturday night. And even as a lead going out, I think like 7-point lead going into the fourth at home. And you let Klay Thompson and the Golden State Warriors outscore you by like 15 points in the fourth to take Game 6 to force the Game 7 back at the Oracle Arena, Golden State at home. And I am not feeling so confident that Oklahoma can pull things out on the road. If this was at home, I was a little bit more confident.
They're up right now.
Even though they did lose Game 6 at home, and even though they've won one in the Oracle Arena, they are up by 11 with about...
They won two. The first two games were in the Oracle. And they won both of those. Didn't they?
Yeah, I remember. I thought they won one game one, game... I thought they won game one, lost game two, then won both at home in Oklahoma. You might be right. I can't remember how the...
I'm pretty sure the series was up 2-0, like... It was 2-0. I'm not sure. I might be wrong, but I might be right.
Might be wrong, but
Mike will find out.
Well,
Mike will find out. He's our
Mr. CJ Force will find. Game one was Oklahoma. Game two was Golden State at home. And then Oklahoma won game three and game four. So I was right. That's how that played out.
That doesn't make
Oklahoma,
any sense.
How does it not make any sense? They won one. They won
because
game. They won game one. They stole one.
No. That's not what I'm saying. Let me talk. Game one and two were in Golden State. Game three and four were in. Oh, never mind. I don't know why I just said that. Oh yeah, game three and four were in Oklahoma. Why was game five in Oklahoma too? I thought they went back and forth.
No, it's 2-2, then 1-1-1.
Never mind.
It used to be 2-3-2, but then home teams, the team that the higher seed got upset because if a lower seeded team stole one of the first two games, then it was easier for that lower seeded team to end up taking that series because the next three games were played in the lower seed stadium. So that's when they went back to going 2-2-1-1-1 versus it used to be 2-3-2.
Oh.
But Oklahoma up 44-33 with about 2.5 left in the second. Obviously, this is going to be a game that we're going to keep a lot of attention on tonight and see who Cleveland is going to be playing Thursday night, game one. If I'm not mistaken, if Golden State wins, it will be Golden State, the home team, and will have home court advantage. But I believe I remember the records correctly without looking at them, but maybe I've been looking. I believe that Cleveland has the better record as Golden State, or I'm sorry, OKC had 55 wins. Cleveland had 57. So really, we want to play Oklahoma if one, because Oklahoma's, my opinion, the easier of the two teams. But if Oklahoma wins, then Cleveland has the home court advantage. But if Golden State wins, Golden State will have the home court advantage due to the seeding and the records.
Wow.
I'm going to say we'll continue to hope and pray that Oklahoma is able to pull this out. So, on the sport, and I'm really about to go left field with this because I just don't know the full story, and I have seen this all over social media. Do you know the deal? And I'm really, my sports fans are going to be like, why? What the hell? Do you know what the actual deal is with this child and the gorilla thing? Other than I know that the mother did not pay attention to the kid. Somehow he ended up with the gorilla. The kid got hurt. But not died, or was not killed or not, just got hurt, and they ended up having to kill the gorilla. Do you know any other details outside of that?
Apparently, what happened was the child, fell into the habitat, and the gorilla drug him across, part of the habitat. Just like Elizabeth the other day and the dog. And her getting a big giant scratch on her face. There's a wall for a reason. Stay out.
Yeah, the only thing I've seen, and like I said, I know all y'all there to tune in to listen to sports and realize what y'all talking about this. But the only thing I've seen is the mother wasn't paying attention to her kid, and the kid basically went out of his way to end up in habitat. There's reasons why. They have the bars, the railing, the walls, everything they have, and
any gorilla habitat I've ever seen has huge walls with thick glass or plastic. Where was this place? This seems shady.
I want to say that because I got something pulled up and it said the Cincinnati Zoo. I don't know if it was the Cincinnati Zoo or not, but that's. I know that I've had people comment that live in Ohio And this right here says Cincinnati, so I don't know if it was a Cincinnati Zoo or not, but, you know, I've been to the Cincinnati Zoo a time or two in my day, but you're talking 20, 30 years at this point. But even the Asheville or Asheboro Zoo, like, there's never been a point. As a matter of fact, where the gorillas are there, they do have glass. I think that's the only part, the only one that doesn't have the glass is the monkeys that have, like, the red butts. I don't know what kind of monkeys they are. And
baboons.
But there's, like, okay, then the baboons,
I've been to...
I think they have, like, a big ditch fall-off where there's no way that they can get to the wall, if I remember correctly.
No, they have glass.
Not outside.
I think there's nets.
No, because you can go outside and see them. There's the part that's inside you can see in the glass, and then if you go outside and walk around, they're outside as well. And but from what I, you know, what little bit I have seen, that's why I don't know a lot of details about it. I just know that from what I saw, the mom wasn't paying no attention. Basically, the kid went out of his way to end up falling in there. I'm not saying it did it intentionally, but went out of his way to make this even possible. That the gorilla, you know, did a little bit of physical harm. It wasn't like it beat the kid or tried to kill it. And because it ended up hurting the child, it was put down to sleep. And I know a lot of people are not happy about it. More people are pissed off at the mother for not being the mother and not paying attention to what was going on. And I know I've had a couple people, even my friends, on Facebook go to Defender, well, you know, this is going on. You know, I'm sorry, but when you're at the zoo and there's dangerous animals, there's really no excuses at all to not have tabs on your kids 100% of the time. I'm sorry, it just is. It's the circle of life. It's the nature of the beast. It is what it is. But I know there's a lot of people out there upset at the fact that this gorilla was basically put down for the fact that the mother was not paying attention to what the hell she was supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, that's really dumb. That's like, you know, me taking one of the kids to Walmart and some guy in front of me drops his, like, some old man in front of me drops his cane, and Elizabeth or Peyton walks up and trips over the cane. So, what I'm going to kill the guy because, you know, my child was hurt because of him. I'm just saying, like, it's stupid. Did you see my thing on Facebook today about Kennedy and Obama?
I seen on your post.
Oh. It said Kennedy put a man on the moon. Obama put a man in the women's bathroom. Or a man in the ladies' room. But, no, that his mother should have been paying more attention to him, and that never would have happened. Like, no. That poor gorilla, because of some dumb lady that was, she was probably on her phone on Facebook. Probably, you know, probably posting about how amazing the time spending with her child at the zoo was, when really she was on Facebook not paying attention to her child. I'd like to know, like, who this woman is. I want to see her Facebook post and her feed. See what she says about this. I can guarantee that she's completely just blaming the gorilla, like he, you know, like the little poor gorilla, like she grabs him and pulled him in, that her son was not the reason, that it was not his fault.
I don't know. I just, like I said, I saw it, and I just, you know, I kind of ignored it the first few times I seen anything about it, because, you know, I hadn't. Honestly, you know, we've seen other gorilla and other monkey stuff go on and be talked about. So, obviously, that's just what I thought it was about, just something that was just revisited from the past. And then I as the last 2 days have gone on, I've seen more and more posts about it. So I'm like, you know, what is really going on? What is the deal with this? So wasn't 100% sure. And I've lost Wi-Fi once again, so I'm trying to get things rebooted so I can continue on.
I know. This is really weird. I've never had this much problem with internet from Charter.
Well, hopefully you got it. But anyway, how we got that out of the way. .48-42 at the half. Oklahoma is up over Golden State. Golden State only shooting 41%, but shooting 41%, 7 for 17 downtown. I guess it's kind of weird to say only when a lot of teams don't even shoot 40%. I guess we're just so used to Golden State shooting so much better. Do we really got to make that much noise in the kitchen? I guess it's just weird to see, I don't know. Like I said, I know that most teams don't shoot that good for three-point range. I guess we're just so used to Golden State shooting such high percentage on the three-pointers. So I guess that's why I said only 41%. But, yeah, Golden State 41%. 1 for 4, didn't make the three-throw line very often. 1 for 4, only 25%. So not only Golden State not finding themselves making it to the free-throw line, really not being effective. OKC being 5 of 8, 63%. Downtown 3-11, she's shooting 27%. As I'm sure the second half will definitely be interesting. I'm just curious to see at any point does the tempers get the best of either one team. I'm curious to know, does anybody's attitude or temper end up dictating how this plays out? So we've seen the temper get the best of a few of the players. We've seen fines. We've seen, you know, technical fouls. I'm just curious, does, when it's said and done, Game 7, does the temper and the frustration get the best of either one of these teams?
Oh, no.
Steph Curry, 2 for 3 from downtown, having a good night so far. Klay Thompson repeating his 41, trying to repeat his 41-point game performance in Game 6 that helped lift Golden State over OKC to force in Game 7, going 4 for 7 from downtown with 13 points. As those two are the only two in double digits, really the only two about just have points. Everybody else has either 2 points, one person with 3. Draymond Green does have 6 points. On the other side of the ball, only one player in double digits for Russell Westbrook with 14 points. Going 1 for 4 from downtown. Durant's only got 9 points with being 1 for 1 from downtown. Not a lot of help for Westbrook. He needs his right-hand man if they're going to make this happen. And they're not only going to beat Golden State, but beat them in the Oracle Arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my phone is, like, messing up. I don't know what's going on. This internet is, like, just dragging my phone, too. I'm trying to look up stuff and not letting
you
do
it.
Did
you not get the same package as last time?
I didn't get... No, how would I get the same package as last time?
With the Wi-Fi band? Like the same speed?
I don't know. I just got their internet package. You understand? Like, it's a different modem.
I must be one of a few people that is not hurt or upset by knowing that Chris Berman is going to retire after this season. He's been doing it since 1987, so I had 29 years of being, you know, basically the voice of football on ESPN. Back in the day, I was fine with him listening to, or I was fine listening to Chris Berman talk on ESPN, but after, you know, years and years of pretty much him saying the exact same thing and really not changing much up, I got to the point that I really could care less I've ever heard him speak ever again. And so his retirement and announcing he's retiring after the season was kind of a smile to my face. I was ready for a change, but I tell you what, this is, you know, they're talking about NFL primetime change, how we watch sports, just different things that people talking, like, they're going to miss this. And I guess I'm different because I was glad to hear that we're going to see them move in a different direction. And not have to hear the same voice over and over.
I don't know that person.
Everything okay there? Yeah. Yeah? I think a couple people real quick. I don't know why I didn't speak. You know, I had a tendency of forgetting to do it. Yeah, I don't know why. Got to make sure I thank Snafu Seasoning, the official sponsor of Thursday Night's Racing with Big Sweat. You can check them out at snafuseasoning.com. That's snafuseasoning.com. 100% all natural ingredients, no preservatives. Get your bottle today. I want to say $6.99 over at snafuseasoning.com. Also, you can just call into the show on Thursday nights, participate in the show. Big Sweat will hook you up with a free bottle of Snafu Seasoning. Also, got to thank Fit for Life. You can check them out at Fit for Life on Facebook. Or check them out at www.fitforlife.com. Get your gym on 24/7, 365 at Fit for Life. Got many locations here in our area. See if you got a local location for you. Make sure you check them out. Like I said, Fit for Life. I want to make sure I take them out. Also, make sure you guys check us out Monday through Wednesday, 9 p.m. The One Thin Nation Sports Show. You can also check out Racing with Big Sweat Thursday night, 9 p.m. You can check out the Hot Laps with Stats Friday night, 8 p.m. Happy Hour Garage at noon. And we were still trying to decide. We were supposed to decide on a show on Sunday, then came across tickets. I kind of just threw out the window because I knew I was not going to be in the area to do a show at all. But we're still working out what we're going to do for a Sunday show. So make sure you guys check us out on the One Thin Nation Sports Radio Network. Speaking of Friday night show, I got Mike in the studio. He's been hanging out. I'm going to give him an opportunity to plug Friday night show, what he's got going on there, plug his Facebook, his Twitter, and maybe give a few thoughts about last night's race at Charlotte. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
How are you doing,
CJ?
Okay.
You're
right. We're working on our guests. We have two guests. God, I know more about tomorrow. We have Nick Swanson, who is the crew chief for the Tommy Ferrara 11X car, and he knows a lot about figure eight history going back to Ice Speedway. So he'll be on along with Tommy Ferrara. And our second guest will either be it's an either-or situation. I'm looking at possibly, I spoke to CJ already, about taping a couple of segments because we have some drivers that compete on Friday nights and aren't available for the live show, but if we take some segments, I can interview them earlier in the week and play them back to you guys on Friday night. So that's a possibility. One of the things I was looking at, but he's running at Stafford this Friday, is Sean Salamito, Timmy Salamito's brother, who has been on the show, Timmy has, before. He is now 2-0, and they had one of the closest finishes, a photo finish in a modified, between him and Ron Silk on Saturday night. And I'll put the video up when it posts. And it's basically, it looks like a drag race. It looks like a drag race at the line. It really does. And so I'll post that when it posts. And so that is a possibility. C.J. Neiman is also 2-0, but he's going to be at Pocono this weekend. That's how I know the Sprint Cup race was at Pocono, because I can't have him on Friday night because he's heading up to Pocono. But he's 2-0 in his family car. He went up to Pennsylvania, and after running Saturday night for the Viscani Motorsports in the crate mod, he went up and won a race at Evergreen, which used to be Mountain Speedway in Pennsylvania. So within the next couple of weeks, we'll have those guys on. But I'm looking for a second guest for this week, other than the first two guests will be Tommy Ferrara and Nick Swanson, and I'll finalize them tomorrow and hopefully finalize a third guest, two on in 1 hour and one on the second hour for Friday night. So it should be an interesting show, whoever ends up coming as that second guest. CJ, it should be an interesting show again.
Facebook and Twitter, where can they find you at and find the show details at?
Okay, Twitter at Stats108. My personal Facebook page is Mike Perricone, and then underneath that you'll see the nickname Stats. And I've also, just last week, it's 1 week old, created a Hot Laps with Stats fan page. And as I put on the page, what I'm looking for you to do, the fans to do, is if you're interested in a particular guest, let me know, and I'll do my best to book them, him or her. And the only thing I ask is keep the comment any way you want, except keep them G-rated. That's the only condition. And either way, it should be it should be an interesting week. So by Tuesday or Wednesday, I will know finally who's going to be on in total, and I will definitely post it up for you guys.
Yesterday's race. Outside of obviously Joe Gibbs Racing is the most dominant team in NASCAR for 2016, what did you get out of this race yesterday?
The thing that struck me, and I mentioned it to people on Facebook today, it's interesting we mentioned Ron Silk, who was involved in the photo finish Saturday night. Ron Silk, I guess about three seasons ago, won the 77-lap Evans-Jezombeck-Baldwin modified event from the pole. 77 laps, was never headed, and won wire to wire. And so I've seen it happen in a mod race, and I mentioned it to people and asked a question on Facebook today. I don't think it's ever happened where a pole sitter has led an entire race, and like you said earlier, not even credited, even when Johnson passed him that one time that he might not have been credited with a full lap in first place. So that means Truex led the entire race wire to wire, and I don't really recall it ever happening in a cup race, in a sprint cup race. I've seen it happen locally, but not in sprint cup. And I was interesting. I couldn't think of the last time I had seen that. You had a bird's eye view of it, of course, but you know, on TV it was just, you know, he was out of the camera shots so often, and you know, like gone the whole race. And so, well, that whole second, like you said, after the tire change and everything, you know, he was so far ahead, it was like a straightaway ahead every time, you know. So it was dominant. There's no question about that.
I tell you what, it was definitely something different to sit there and watch somebody dominate a race the way Truex had dominated. Like I said, if it had been anybody else, maybe outside of Danica, I would have really been upset, you know, knowing that I didn't hardly get any sleep. Today was a very miserable day for me for the lack of sleep. But the fact that I, even though the tickets were free and I got to ride for free, I'm the one that, see, I got kind of stuck driving because I had been to Charlotte so many times, and neither one of them had been to Charlotte, so I was kind of the designated driver, which, you know, in all fairness, it kind of worked out. I'm sitting there thinking, I ain't paying for gas, I ain't paying for the ticket, I can at least drive. But knowing all this, if it would have been pretty much anybody else, I really would have been upset that I would have sat there and went through all that to watch somebody dominate a race like Martin Truex did. But because it was him, I don't have a problem with him dominating the race. Like I said, I don't even really have a problem with him winning the race other than the fact that I'm just tired of watching a Joe Gibbs racing car or a pilot car win a race this year. Like, it's just beyond dominance. Well, the way Truex dominated yesterday's race, it's kind of the same chokehold that Joe Gibbs Racing and his pilot team has had on NASCAR, period, in 2016.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing, you mentioned what Martin Truex has gone through. I thought it was interesting that not so much that they interviewed Chery, but that in the video I saw, I don't know whether it came across this way on television, but in the video I saw afterwards, she could hardly talk. She was crying and emotional, and you know, she could hardly, you know, the guy standing there with the microphone, and, you know, she's trying to talk, but she was so emotional she couldn't get the words out, you know. But like you say, that's one of the reasons, unfortunate reason, but that's one of the reasons he, you know, he deserved that win too. Because how he kept his mind, on, you know, to drive a race car, you have to once you're strapped in. But, you know, just to see his dominance in view of, like what you said before, in view of what he's gone through off the track as well as on, you know, was something to see.
It was definitely, like I said, the Truex and NASCAR made me look like a liar to two brand new fans. You know, I'm all convinced 11, 12 o'clock. That's not what time we should expect to get out of here. And like I said, that race finished up, and I looked at my phone, and it said like 9:59 or maybe right at 10 o'clock. I was like, holy crap. Like, I was honestly expecting us to be here at least a whole another hour, you know, maybe even longer. And, you know, we got, you know, I told him probably 11, 12 o'clock we get back, and here I'm dropping my son off at 12:30.
Right. And one last thing, I forgot to mention this. I passed a note on to you off the air. Well, you were on the air, but I passed a note on to you. Another thing that surprised me, now, it could be because his car was in worse shape than first believed, or that I saw, but Kyle Busch pulling off when he was like, I think either 8th or 9th and pulled it into the garage. And everybody was saying, wow, he left. And somebody on the thread even said he's pulling a crybaby thing. And I don't think it was just because he couldn't catch up to the field. I think it was just, you know, maybe I would hope if he went into the garage, it was because his car was damaged. But it just surprised me. It just surprised me that he pulled off when he was in eighth position towards the end of the race. I would think he would nurse it in and get maybe a top 10 or a top 20 at least. And instead, he goes into the garage and ends up 33rd. It was a surprise to me.
When he went by, I saw that he had hit the wall. It looked like from, you know, the way that the side of the car looked, like he had hit it pretty decent. As a matter of fact, you know, I didn't see him actually hit the wall. It was pointed out to me. The way that the car looked, I would have been surprised if it was a caution. Now, obviously, I didn't see the record, so I didn't know if it was a debris or not. But I honestly thought at that point, and I was actually hoping, because that would have bunched everybody up for one last restart before the end of the race. But I honestly thought, you know, the way this car looked, that there was going to be a possibility of a caution. There's a possibility that something was broke, that, you know, it was, you know, not going to make it possible for him to drive that car safely or at the speed it needed to be driven.
No.
Obviously, you know, we don't know the extent of the actual damage, but from what I saw when he went in front of me, it looked like he hit the wall pretty hard.
Okay, well, that answers the question then, because I know he's a competitive guy. He just wouldn't give up, or not give up, but like pull off. And like I said, I would think that being in the eighth spot, say, even if he slowed down because of whatever damage, he could have gotten maybe a top 20. But it just surprised me that he pulled off. But I guess, like you said, it was probably.
That brings me to another point, though, or another question for you. Has this whole chase thing changed the mentality? Say that, you know, maybe there was not no more damage. Maybe he said, you know what, I've won a race. I'm in the chase. I don't need to drive around a car. Now I'm going to be a lap down. There's no chance of me winning the race. What's the point of me being out there at this point? I mean, is there a possibility that because this new chase out, you know, this new chase format, and basically you win, you're in, does that change the mentality of the drivers? Does that make them not care maybe as much if they get damages towards the end of the race like that?
I'll be honest, when it first happened, I didn't think of that, but I was on the thread in Steve's group there, the NASCAR and other racing, for the race, and the interesting thing is, somebody brought that up right away. When Bush pulled off into the garage, somebody wrote on the thread, well, Bush is in the chase, what does he care? You know, when some people were calling him a wimp and that he gave up and everything, or crybaby, somebody mentioned that on the thread, that he was in the chase, why chance it? So,
why chance being out there on the track and something happened? And, you know, you get hurt or you get injured, you know, you had two broken feet last year. So if you cannot competitively put yourself in a position where you're going to even finish on the lead lap, no low, win the race, and you're already in the chase, why chance it? I mean, I know you got sponsor obligations, and I'm sure Joe Gibbs JD, I'm sure that they don't want their drivers just, you know, saying, you know, F it, let's park the car, we can't win the race. But why chance it? What was so important those last few laps, and what made the difference if he finished one lap down and probably in the 20th section somewhere versus finishing 33rd? I mean, yes, you get a few more points and then want to win a few more dollars, but honestly, as much as I'm sure Kyle Busch is making, because I can only imagine to sponsor his car is probably one of the most expensive cars to sponsor, knowing that you're going to get plenty of TV time and probably find yourself in victory lane on one of the races you sponsor. I'm sure that the money is not an issue either, so why chance it?
Right. No, I mean, that's, you know, like I said, I didn't think of it myself, but I read it on the thread that, you know, somebody brought that up right away as the first issue. And, you know, it's possible. Now, if anybody asked him on the radio, like MRN or television, I wouldn't expect him to say with a microphone in front of him, oh, yeah, that's what I did. I'm not saying he would admit it, but it's a possibility, you know.
Okay, there's no doubt in my mind if a microphone put in front of his phone, he'd be like, the toe was out or an axle broke or something, you know. Something broke that it was unable to, you know, compete at the level or the speed it needed to be, or you know, the minimum speed or something. I'm sure that he'll say something other than, you know what, there was really no point in me being out there. You know, I'm already in the chase. I'm going to go lap down. Well, who cares? He's not going to say that either. I asked this question to Steve earlier, and I want to get your opinion. You know, we've had several drivers do the duels. We had the Indianapolis 500 yesterday and the Coke Zero. Most notably, Kurt Busch did it a few years ago. I asked Steve earlier, and you were listening to the show, so you know where I'm about to ask. Danica has come from IRL. She drives a NASCAR. Obviously, one of the more physically fit drivers out there. And has never really been a topic of conversation, and I'm not sure why, because she's won a race in IRL. She's competitively, you know, she does well in NASCAR. Could you see that ever being a possibility yourself? I know that Steve is willing to bet that it'll probably happen in the next couple of years. And I'm curious. I would love to see it. What are your thoughts on it? One, do you see it happening? Two, do you think that physically, as a female, knowing the difference in the bone structure and muscle structure, and knowing that's 1,100 miles of racing, and we've seen the drivers that have do it, it's worn them out. Do you think physically she can handle it? And third of all, would that change people's opinion of her, especially if she finishes? Kurt Busch didn't finish the Coke Zero race, the Coke Cola race. And that had to do with a technical issue that the car broke down or got a wreck. I forget what it was, but it wasn't because he couldn't physically handle it. But does that change the opinion, especially if she's able to at least finish both races regardless of where she finishes?
No, I think I could see it happening, and for a reason. And that reason is you talk about the physical stress or strain. I could see her training to do that, maybe before, maybe lifting weights, something on that, or having a program, you know, to increase her strength maybe. But more than that, I think it would, if she were to do it and do well, like Steve was mentioning, Kurt Busch did it, but didn't end up finishing the 500, even though he competed in the 600. But I could see her bringing...
Other way around.
Bringing new fans. Yeah,
the other way around, I think he finished like sixth in the 500, and then he ended up not finishing
right.
The 600.
Right,
so,
that's right. Did not finish, that's right. But I could see it happening for the sole reason, of course for her to do it, but also to bring in new fans, new female fans. I really think that if she were to do it and do well, like a podium or top 10 or in either race, I think it would bring female fans in. And I know people that we've had on the shows on the 110 Nation, like Amber, and people I know from Riverhead, female drivers have told me they follow Danica. So, the female drivers already in the local tracks would be interested in it as well. And I can see it happening in about 2 or 3 years from now. And like you say, Steve mentioned a couple of Ganassi I could see like Tony and Stuart Haas going and saying, hey, can you give Danica a ride, or them working something out with an IndyCar team, and I could see it happening, you know, and I think it would be a boost for the female fan, you know.
Do you think she would do it? Do you think that she would want to add that to her legacy? I mean, obviously, you know, she wasn't the one to start this movement or really open the door. As we've had many female drivers before, and even last week we had Jennifer Jo Cobb, who had been in the scene before Danica was in the scene. But Danica has been the driver to me that the door was open for her, and she's ran with it and has knocked down barriers, has knocked over walls to make it a little bit easier for people out there. And she has set records, and she's done things that no other woman has done in this sport. Do you think that is something that she would be interested in? One more thing to add to her legacy, something that she would, she would be in the record book. And I honestly don't know if any other female would ever try it, but if it does happen again, yeah. I don't see it happen for a while. I think she's one of the females that I can honestly see competing in both races in the same day or have the sponsors and owners that would be willing to give her that opportunity.
Right. At one time, I thought Janet Guthrie might, but she didn't catch on with NASCAR. She was in Indy, but not really in NASCAR. She tried NASCAR a couple of times, but she wasn't Danica. Danica was the only one who, you know, really raced in both on a extended basis. But that's the reason I could see Danica doing it and not anybody else at this point, you know. I could see it happening. And I think because, I mean, she's not like you say, she doesn't go into it saying, I'm going to open doors. But just for her own career, I think she'd be interested in doing it. She seems like, even though she hasn't won consistently, I think she's competitive. And I think she would want to do it. I don't know. I haven't asked her. But she seems like the type of person.
Realistically, there's 33 cars in the 500 and there's 40 cars in the 600. Realistically, where do you think she would have to finish in both races to really kind of change the minds and maybe some opinions of the fans out there, especially that are so diehard anti-Danica? If you had to guess, if there was a place that she would have to finish in both races, it would be both top 10, top 15s, or maybe, you know, since she's won an Indy race and has had a little bit more success in Indy, maybe top, you know, 5 or 10 and one and something in the other, what would you have to guess that would really kind of open eyes and help start changing the opinion of what people think about Danica?
I would say maybe, you know, it's hard to say because I don't, you know, I never had a negative feeling about Danica anyway, not prejudicial that way. Like I said, she hasn't won as consistently as some other people. But that's not because she was a female or people say she always goes into the wall. But I would think that with 33 cars, maybe she would have to finish somewhere in the teens in the IndyCar race and then maybe a top 10 in NASCAR. And if she could do that in one day, I think it might change, you know, because 33 figure fit in the teens would be somewhere half the field. So even with 33 cars, if she finished in her first, not her first shot in an Indy car, but her first shot doing both, if she finished in the team 11th, 12th, 13th, somewhere in there, and then a top 10 in NASCAR, I think that might, you know, that might be. And of course, if she could do a higher finish, then by all means, you know. But, like, to answer your question, yeah, I think, you know, somewhere in the teens in the Indy and the top 10 in the 600, and that would, you know.
And that's interesting. I would probably be the exact opposite. And it's more the fact that I know she's won an IRL race. I know she's led in Indy, and I know she's had, you know, finishes towards the front, top five, maybe not top five, but at least top 10 in Indy. And so I would be more of she needs to have at least top 10 finish in the Indy and then maybe a top 15 to top 20 in NASCAR and more of the fact because we know that she's going to miss the driver's meeting, so she's automatically going to be sent to the rear of the field. So after competing in the Indianapolis 500, getting a top 10, top 5 finish, and then hauling butt down and doing another 600 miles, and to come from 40th or somewhere in that ballpark figure, depending if anybody else gets moved into the rear of the field, and work her way up to a top 15, top 20 finish, I think that would be beyond remarkable. And I think that alone should turn a lot of heads and have different opinions, because that would be one hell of a test.
Okay, but my thought was, you know, that's a point for what you said, but also I was thinking it from the amount of cars. When you have 33 cars and figuring you're finishing a team somewhere, you're halfway, you know, you're halfway. And then obviously with the lesser cars in less number of cars in the 600, you know, if you could finish higher. But then also take into account, yes, she's driven Indy before, and she's won Indy, you know, she's won in Indy cars, but she hasn't been in one in a while. So she's more acclimated to the Sprint Cup car at this point, and that's where I reversed it, I guess. That's my thought process on it.
I was sitting there thinking about it yesterday and thinking about the fact that we've had drivers do the dual races, and I was just, you know, sitting there thinking about stuff. Why has this never been a topic of conversation? No one that she's competed in both of them has had pretty decent seasons, or, you know, decent careers in both of them, and she's physically probably one of the more physically fit drivers in all of NASCAR, even though she's the only female. So why has this never even been brought up or a topic of conversation? Like, it just didn't even make sense to me why it's never even been a conversation.
Well, I was about to ask you before an interesting question. You said at one point you met Danica because you know she's small, or, you know, you were surprised by her size and everything. I'm surprised you didn't ask me that question.
I just thought about it yesterday. It was never really crossed my mind. Her IRL career never really crossed my mind, unless we're talking about Indy. So it's kind of one of the reasons. I just never really even thought about it until yesterday. So,
right.
And the time I had to meet her, I was just more starstruck the fact that you know, to me, that's just one of the hottest females in the world, period. So.
Yep.
You know, I had on my thoughts about Danica Patrick.
I got you. But to the basic question, I could see it happening, definitely. And I could see a lot of women. I would think if she did it one year, that, they have the ratings and everything else. I would think that if they separated the ratings or however they do it, they'd see the female viewership go up that year. I just have that feeling, you know.
And it's crazy to know that even though there are so many people that think Danica can drive, that we all know if this is something she wanted to do, that there are sponsors and there are at least two team owners, and I'd be willing to bet that, you know, Stuart Haas wouldn't have a problem with it, and I'd be willing to bet that Andretti Racing, I believe that's where she was racing at, would give her an opportunity, or at least somebody would give her an opportunity in Indy. I would find it hard to believe that finding a ride or a sponsor to make it happen is the issue. I think it's whether or not she wants to do it and if she's physically ready to do it. But there's no doubt in my mind that finding a ride and sponsors is not going to be the issue that keeps her from doing it.
No, she won't have problems with, like you said, even getting a car, whether Tony does it for her or, you know, the team or whatever. I don't see that being an issue. I think they would let her drive the car. You know, any Indy owner would drive the car, you know.
It makes you wish you could be a fly on the wall and wonder and want to know if that's ever been a conversation, if it's ever been brought up behind closed doors.
Yeah, and that's the point. You don't know if it has been or not, you know? because at times, I mean, somebody might have mentioned it, you know, but we don't know that. The reason we don't know that is it didn't hit the media, you know.
Especially a couple years, 2 years, 3 years ago, whenever Kurt Busch did it, I'm sure that had to have been a conversation that was opened up at least once with Danica, knowing her, you know, her background. So, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that conversations had to have been brought up at least once.
Right, and if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this. Wasn't that the first time Kurt Busch was ever in an IndyCar?
I want to say it was. I can't remember if he's had any kind of experience before. So that
gives more credence to what you were saying, that you would think that Danica would be part of a discussion since she's driven both cars, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Most definitely. Well, Mike, I wanted to thank you for hanging out with me and giving your opinion on some of these topics that we got going on. And definitely look forward to having you hanging out and kind of being our statistician throughout the rest of the week and Friday night, ready to be there for you. And looking forward to Friday's night show.
No problem. Thank you very much. Take care.
Yes, sir. I'll talk to you later.
That's fun.
That's Mike Perricone, host of Hot Laps with Stats, Friday nights, 8 p.m. Make sure you guys check that out. Make sure you guys go over to Facebook and like their fan page, Hot Laps with Stats, as well. He's got a lot of great things going on over there, and just thankful to have him part of the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, and he's one of the reasons why we continue to grow, and just very thankful that not only is he part of it, but he's very dedicated, very motivated, and wants big things to happen here at the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. So make sure you guys check that out. Don't forget, Monday through Wednesday, right here at the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, 9 p.m. Also, Thursday night, 9 p.m., we got the Racing with Big Sweat. Thanks to Snafu Seasoning. Make sure you guys check them out at snafuseasoning.com. That's S-N-A-F-U seasoning.com. Also, Saturdays at noon, Happy Hour Garage. And sometime this week, I promise you sometime this week, we'll be talking about what we got going on Sunday. And we're still working out what we want to do. The game has flip-flops. What was an Oklahoma City lead at the half is now at the end of the third, and Golden State is up 71-60, as Golden State only 41%, as I said earlier. As move up to a 45%, as they're 13-29, OKC is just not feeling it at all from the field, as they're only shooting 36% from the paint, and only 3 of 18, that is 17% from downtown, as it is looking like Oklahoma City's Thunder run is coming to an end. As remarkable as it's been, them eliminating San Antonio and taking Golden State to 7 games, as much as I would love to see Oklahoma City Thunder be that team that Cleveland gets to play, one, I like the matchup better, but two, it gives Cleveland the home court advantage throughout the finals. Really feeling like it's going to be a Golden State-Cleveland rematch. And we'll get to honestly see who was the better team this year. They're a better team, period, as last year Cleveland had to go without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love for the finals, well, at least most of the finals, as Kyrie Irving got hurt in game one and Kevin Love was hurt earlier in the playoffs. So definitely going to keep our eye on the rest of this game tonight and see how this plays out. You can check us out on Twitter. You can follow me at CJ Sports One. You can follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Also, check us out on Facebook. My personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check our blog site out, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. Schedule the show. We got a late start, and so I had to schedule the show for an amount of time. So instead of making it last until almost 11:30, I did it for an hour and a half, which just ended a few minutes ago. So we're getting ready to wrap things up for the night. A little bit shorter show than normal. I know we got Izzo joining us at 10:30 tomorrow night to talk about the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, as they got underway today. As Pittsburgh is up 3-2 with about 2.5 minutes left in the third. Hosting San Jose, as he will be giving us updates on what made it. In a Pittsburgh-San Jose Finals. We'll be giving us a recap of Game 1. Also, be talking about the World Cup roster, as that was finalized as well. So a lot of things going on tomorrow night, 10:30. Check it out. Miss Lee is not giving me a guest list for this week. I don't think we have anybody scheduled for this week yet. Not 100% sure. I might have to dig in the archives and see who I can find and see what I can find. But 9 o'clock tomorrow night, I can promise you it'll at least be Izzo, Shorty, and myself. That much. No, not yet, Mike. I'm still trying to figure out what we're going to do on Sunday. Right now, we got 4 out of 7 shows racing. I was trying to prevent it being 5 out of 8 shows and try to figure out another way to include her on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. I'm still working that out, but not 100% sure on that yet. We might still end up going in that direction. I'll keep you in the loop, Mike. But tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, make sure you guys are here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Once again, I want to thank everybody for making it possible for us being out at the Charlotte Motor Speedway last night for the Coca-Cola 600. Very, very appreciative of that. Very appreciative that my son was able to go with me. And had been a little bit of been a hot mess that he was able to go to the race. The daughter, she'd gone to one recently, or at least more recent anyway. So he was glad to be able to have his turn again. Feel kind of bad because I've been to like 30 races in the last 2 years, but they've all been meeting. I can't take them to them. It's one of those things that wasn't thrown in my face, but it was kind of like you've been to all these races. I ain't been to one forever, and it's hard to explain to them that you can't go. That especially when I take Shorty to the races and she's part of the media, like you get to take everybody else, and it's kind of hard to explain to a 9-year-old how this all actually works and why you can only go to the races I've taken you to this point. But I'm glad that it all worked out, and I was able to take him. We had a great time, and so I got to thank everybody for that. Got to thank Staff Food Seasoning. Got to thank Fit for Life. Got to thank Happy Hour Garage Racing, Hot Laps with Stats, Racing with Big Sweat, for all having their shows on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. Everything I need to get out there for tonight. I want to thank everybody once again. You guys have a great night. Until tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110 Nation and on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports.